Yeah, hello and welcome to the Fox Football Podcast. We've arrived in the podcast room. Myself, Daniel Garb and Simon Hill, full of energy in a sense, not necessarily for the right reasons, because we've just stepped away from the Alan Stadjic presser, which again has got everyone in Australian football shaking their heads, and it's led to a lot of vibrant discussion yet again, which we'll get into in the Fox Football Podcast, along with the A-League review, your questions, and a look at the Premier League too, and some other matters. It's another big day for the wrong reasons in Australian football, Simon Hill, and yeah, it just grows and grows, the story, doesn't it?
It does. It's grown legs, unfortunately. It's about 18 feet tall at the moment, and it needs to be chopped down at some point.
We've got another guest with us on the Fox Football Podcast. We've, again, rotated. We've played the kids this season, haven't we? We've brought in new faces.
And we've gone for experience today. and a target man.
A target man, but a kid in the podcast world, I think, making his debut with us. The great Brucey Chatay has joined us, and we're delighted to have him.
It's great to make my podcast debut, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Are you nervous?
No.
Brucey, good to see you, mate. And before we get into all the Matilda stuff, what's the situation with you and your playing career? We had a few questions on Twitter last night. We're loving what you're doing on Fox.
Okay.
Are you still keen to play? Are you still involved or keen to get back into playing? Or is it just about the media now, and that would be understandable?
Because like he's not been asked this question about 100 times.
Because you're flying.
Still tossing it up, mate. But I can say this much. I'm enjoying my time in the media. So, yeah, obviously decisions to be made. But, look, I was pretty, you know, pigeonholed vision. Growing up, obviously, I think you have to be to make it to the elite level. But as I got older, I had other interests. I think I'm lucky. A lot of players just think in football. I had a lot of other interests and a lot of other avenues that I've been able to pursue as well as my football. So keen to explore those as well. So as I said, it's a bit of a interesting.
It's very cryptic, isn't it?
Yeah.
A little bit.
Thought I'd give a cryptic answer to that one.
We've got that out of the way. Mate, we're happy to have you here on the Fox Sports football team, that's for sure, for as long as you want to stay. Right, let's get into the Matilda stuff. When I emailed Simon Hill at voiceoffootball.com.au last night at 9:12 p.m. and Bruce Chatay.
Sorry, have I got a website now?
And Bruce Chatay at socceroo512.com.au. We gave a rundown of the podcast and all the things we would go into. And we've just about put a line through half of it because the Matilda stuff, again, has taken precedence. This Alan Stadjic press conference was gripping, it was raw, and it's left a lot of people looking at the FFA as we stand right now without any clarity on this decision, saying, what on earth have you done? How have you left this man and this team and, in some ways, this code in such a mess?
Yeah, I mean, I was there today, and obviously Stadj was rather emotional, particularly when he started talking about his family and how it's affected them. I think we are still no further on in this story than we were when it first happened. When was it, 10 days ago? Something like that. Because we still don't know the answers. And until we get those answers, or at least some form of clarity, I'm afraid this just is not going to go away. The FFA can hope that it's going to as much as they want. But I think there's an awful lot of anger, not just because of people who think Stadj is a good bloke or, you know, and we have to, said this today, you have to remember as well, there might be something in this. You know, there may well be a good reason for sacking him, but the fact that we don't know has left it open to so, so much speculation and innuendo and things that are probably being put out there that are, you know, totally wrong. It's incumbent upon the FFA to come out and make some sort of statement. You can't just leave it as, well, if you knew what we knew. Well, we don't.
Yeah.
That's the whole problem. And the longer that goes on, I can only see one outcome in this, and that is Alan Stadjic's legal team are going to have an absolute field day in court, because you can't just sack a person and say, we know the reason. They haven't told him. He doesn't know, let alone the rest of us. So either they've got to come out and make a statement, or if they are unwilling or unable to do so because of the confidentiality around these surveys and everything else, then for me, and this is probably the best solution for all involved, you set up an independent inquiry. You get people who are not connected either with the game or certainly with the Matildas. Let them sift through the evidence. Let them come to their own conclusions. And then you have closure on this. Otherwise, this is going to be an open wound that is going to be picked at for months and months and months. And God help the next Matildas coach and the poor girls who are trying to win a World Cup in 4 or 5 months' time. This is a huge distraction for everybody and so, so unnecessary, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. It's not a bright spot on the game, that's for sure. I think, look, I try to look at it from an independent sort of view. We don't know what's
correct.
Transpired.
Yep.
FFA is stacked with legal expertise. So when you say statutory laws will have a field day, I find it hard to believe that all that legal expertise, don't forget Chris Nicu is a fantastic, well, high profile.
And David Gallup.
Lawyer, yeah. So is David Gallup. He's got that background. So I just can't fathom that such intellectual people would have done this and left themselves open from a legal perspective. Mm. Obviously, the fallout's obviously been terrible. The way it's been managed, obviously, everyone, I'm sure even the FFA would agree that it should have and could have easily be better managed. I think from a media perspective, you know, a lot of people in the media are asking for the reasons why. I don't know if we need the reasons why. I mean, in football, coaches get sacked all the time, whether they've been successful
not
or not, people want to take a different direction or not, and there's never anyone jumping up.
But then say that. They've spoken about toxic culture, about these sorts of things, alluded to things without actually having a reason.
Yeah, I think
that's not fair on his reputation.
And that's what I think people are up in arms about. I think, you know, you can sack a coach. You know, if you've got a boss and we don't know the ins and outs of his contract, but if they're capable of sacking the coach just because they felt like it one day, if that's in his contract, then okay, do that. But then you've got to divulge something. Mm, else,
exactly.
Else this, I've spoken to people in the media and, you know, generally, football moves really quickly. So you'd think, you know, after a week or two, everyone's going to leave it alone. Everyone in the media I've spoken to is like, this, we're not leaving this.
Yeah.
As it stands, midday on Monday, almost 1 o'clock, the FFA board is having a board meeting this afternoon, as we just addressed Brucey's mic. And the information I've got is, you know, they're standing their ground and they're remaining on course with what they've done so far. The interesting development today, I've spoken to the PFA. We heard Alan Stadjic say in that press conference that he oversaw the survey. Mm-hmm. The PFA have been embroiled in this indirectly because it was a PFA/OurWatch survey. They have come out and said they never intended for this to lead to this course of action. The survey was done merely to try and improve the situation in the team, to be constructive for the team moving forward, like any team or any business would do. Even if you've got cultural problems, you might want to just say, all right, let's take stock of where things are. We can fix this situation. We're doing well. We've got some deficiencies to iron out and some issues to sort of smooth over. Let's do this. And Alan Stadjic, according to the PFA, oversaw the survey and actually corrected some of the grammatical errors or situations with the survey to basically get a better result for his team. The PFA has said they would never have allowed their players to do it if they knew it would lead to this sort of situation. And that leads to potentially, and that's the innuendo right now, that it was purely, and Alan Stadjic even mentioned it, an agenda on the board to remove him.
Well, I don't think that anyone, any clearly thinking person, would have thought this survey is to get rid of Alan Stadjic. I still don't believe it's just the surveys that have done
that's it. That's the FFA's reason. That's what that is their smoking gun. That's what they've used as their rationale. The surveys brought back.
Well, actually, Joseph Carozzi said in a tweet, there is no smoking gun. So if there's no smoking gun, why is he gone? And yet, obviously, there was another FFA director that came out and said, oh, you know, if you knew what we knew. You know, he'll never work in women's football again. That was the quote, wasn't it?
Yeah, what Alan Stadjic said today.
That's, you know, when you use that language, that's when the lawyers will get involved. And from the FFA's point of view, I would imagine they'd have a very strong defence to that. And it may, you might be right, Bruce. There may well be a very good reason, and we can't lose sight of that. But because we simply do not know, the whole thing is mushroomed into this cloud of obfuscation that nobody can actually find a way through. And the only people really who have all the answers are the FFA. And as I go back to my earlier point, if they can't or are unwilling to come out and say the reason, then you have to construct an independent inquiry. You have
to. Well, I speak to the PFA quite a bit as well, and they alluded to that there was a toxic culture at the Matildas. You know, and they've been very silent on this issue.
No, well, so I've just said exactly what they've come out and said today. So, of course.
So something must have been awry. Whether
which is why they had the exactly.
Whether it's enough to sack the coach and this and that.
Mate, you could go through 90% of businesses in Australia or teams and there'd be cultural problems. That doesn't mean that they can't be rectified 5 months out from a World Cup.
Yeah, look,
my other question is this. If you're going to get rid of the coach and tear everything up 5 months before a World Cup, was there a process that led to this? You know, it was only, 18 months ago he was handed a three-year extension, or was it 4 year? 3 or 4 year. You know, David Gallop, Emma Highwood, they've all been around this. They attend training sessions as far as I'm aware. You know, they've always spoken very highly of Stagic, and then all of a sudden, bang, you know, he's gone. Normally in any workplace organisation, if you're doing something wrong, there is a process that you have to go through. You get a warning, an official warning, and then eventually you're sacked. Now, Stagic, from what he said today at the press conference, I mean, he's just been caught completely unaware by all of this. He doesn't know. The FFA won't say. It doesn't appear that there's been that sort of process. So you're left in limbo, scratching your head, and that's why it hasn't gone away.
But obviously, we're looking for justification as to the sacking because the team was performing well on the field.
I don't think it's just that.
So, but people can get, like a coach can get, I know you say normal workplace, there's a process, this, that, but you think they did that at Man U with Mourinho? I know they weren't doing well. But a coach
But that is the team was doing well. I mean, that's the crucial bit of information.
So the team was doing well, but if someone wants to hit a reset button.
Yeah, sure. But give a reason.
Yeah, well. Are they obliged to? I don't think so.
I think to the football public they are.
No,
well, it would be ideal to them too. They're not obliged to.
And to Alan Stagic they are.
They're not obliged to.
But they're not obliged.
Unless they then go out and say, well, if you knew what we knew and this guy will never coach in women's football again, then you're in the realms of innuendo. Then you're in the realms of trashing a person's character. And that's the problem.
But they've got to give Alan Stagic a reason. They've got to, unless, you know, there is something so incredibly inappropriate that it can't be put out in public. But there's nothing, they've never suggested anything like that.
But we don't
know. Joseph Carozzi said it, there is no smoking gun.
Look, we don't know what.
He sat in that board meeting.
We don't know what his contract was. He's obviously lawyering up from what we could take out of his presser today. So he obviously feels aggrieved and that legally he has an avenue to get compensated. You know,
I thought he's already been paid out, hasn't he?
No.
No? Okay.
Not sure.
So, yeah, look, it's going to be something that the powers that be have to deal with. Unfortunately, it's just another, I don't say distraction, but it's just another thing that's off field that we don't really want to be talking about.
I'll put my hand up on this. When it happened, I thought there has to be something as well. I thought there's no way educated people could sack a coach 5 months out from a World Cup of arguably the most successful national team at the moment in Australian sport, unless there was an overwhelming reason. And again, there still might be something, but we don't know. As it stands, the feeling on that seems to have been diluted enormously. And I'll put my hand up. I defended the FFA on Twitter in conversations with a few people, thinking there must be something. Let's not jump to conclusions that they're wrong. Well, you know, I'm backtracking from that now. I hold my hand up because it doesn't seem like there is. You know, and the FFA having a board meeting now, you've got to ask questions about the future. If there isn't something that is certainly warranted for the sacking of Alan Stagic, about the future of the CEO, David Gallop, you have to ask those questions
of course
right
you
now.
Do. And not least because the fact that this survey has been leaked. Well, it's not leaked. I think it was open access.
And we've asked these questions on Gallop for a while.
That's got nothing to do with FFA. That's a PFA survey.
Yeah, but they made the decision. They used that to make the call to sack him.
But it's their coach. It's their organisation. You would imagine that there would be some sort of security put around that in collaboration with the PFA, but clearly there wasn't. But it's just a cock-up, I don't isn't think, it? I also Let's don't be think, honest. It's the biggest cock-up since the last one.
Yeah, look, I don't know, and we don't know, whose decision it was. I think it's come as a board decision.
Yeah, and there's a lot of David's innuendo.
Answerable to the board. So if the board's told him, and we don't know this, it's not that. I doubt that this is David Gallop's decision.
Well, it's not his decision at all, but he can make recommendations to the board as CEO.
Do we know that for sure?
Well, that is
that it wasn't his decision.
We don't know that for sure.
See what I mean?
But the board's going to tick off on that,
of course. But you know, we go around in circles and circles and circles, suggesting this, that, and the other. But at the end of the day, we don't know.
Yeah,
nobody knows.
We don't,
including crucially, Alan Stadgett.
Yeah.
And that for me is the biggest issue. If you're going to get rid of a coach, hey, no problem. Coaches get fired every week of the year all around the world. But there is normally, and I wrote this on the website last week, there's three reasons. First is results. Mm. If the results are poor, you know that the coach is under pressure. Secondly, personality clashes. That's normally put out there. The third one is misdemeanors. And normally attached to that is serious misconduct. And then everybody goes, right, okay, we know the parameters we're dealing with here. That's been conspicuous by its absence in all of this. And then Carozzi comes out and says, there's no smoking gun. And you go, well, which is it? Is he guilty of something serious or is he not? Other directors are saying he'll never work in women's football again. And then they're saying, well, it wasn't that survey. It was sort of an overall thing. I mean, the whole thing is so woolly and badly presented, that there is no wonder that the media is asking questions.
And the feeling here is that there's an agenda against him from a couple of board members. And that was written in an article by Andrew Webster in Fairfax Media. David Gallop said, according to when it came to the board changes, this is good for me, it's not good for you. That's the quote that was printed in Fairfax Media, talking about people who had been put on the board who wanted Alan Stadgett out. That was the sentiment of the article. And that is now gone into prominence even more, that feeling, because of the press conference today and the lack of clarity from the FFA.
I think what's undoubtedly problematic is the vacuum being created through lack of information. And, the FFA's relationships are obviously very strained with a whole range of stakeholders, and that feeds into it as well. You know, I've got no doubt that there's some people, organisations out there that are trying to tear this down. It's like, when's enough's enough? So what do we do? Do we do an independent review and then get the results of that? And then what? Does he have to be sacked? Does she have to be sacked? Does this person have to leave? But when's it enough? I feel like now with the relationships the way they are, it's I get the sense that some people will just never be satisfied as well. Obviously, this situation isn't helping, but...
It's a very delicate time for the game, isn't it?
It is.
And, I've heard one or two people already say, be careful what you wish for, get her into the last board. But, in all honesty, I think that's fudging the issue, because these problems within the FFA have been building for a long, long time. And in fact, the reason why they're so short on credit at the moment is because of what's happened, or the lack of what's happened in a lot of areas over the last 3 years. The one area that was going swimmingly well for them was the Matildas.
But when that comment was made, be careful what you wish for, it was done with the sentiment of be careful what you wish for in terms of people with agendas. And if this is the case, that there has been agendas in regards to removing Alan Stadgett, then that statement rings true. Then you've put people on whatever the agendas might have been, whether it's clubs, whether it's this or that with the A-League. This is one of the things that can come to fruition, an agenda to remove a coach and stuff up our women's national team, which was flying.
How do we know the Matildas won't just kill it even more now?
They might do.
So we might just all
maybe they'll just get
words.
Really angry and win it.
What happens if they go and win the World Cup now?
The new coach is a genius.
You know what I mean? I'd like to see a few people's reactions then.
Hopefully that's the case. You know who is killing it right now? The Perth Glory, men and women's team. Let's talk about some football.
Watch this. This
That he is, and as are the Perth Glory, 7 points clear at the top. Sam Kerr did the job in the W League semi-final. The Glory will take on Sydney FC on Saturday in the W League decider at Jubilee Oval. That should be a beauty. And the Perth Glory men's side now have one hand on the Premier's plate, and it seems like they are set to win a trophy for the first time in the A-League era.
How does it feel, Garvey?
Mate, I'm loving it because, you know, that was commonplace for the Perth Glory growing up in out west, Brucey. Watching Samson Siasia come to town and Bernd Stanger kiss police women and Bobby Despotovsky head in late winners against Adelaide and 50,000 people turn out for finals. And, mate, the place was a party every single week. And it's taken a little while this season to get it back, but the Popolution now is in full effect. And I'll tell you what, if
Popolution,
if things go the way that they are going right now, they'll get 50,000 at Optus Stadium for a home grand final. And that could be something special. But what did you make of the performance yesterday and the way they got things going in that second half after what was a very cagey first 45?
Very, very good. Very good. You can see that Perth are a good sub because they play with structure. And they've got individuals who are at the top of their game at the moment. Economides, of course, and the depth of the squad. Economides, Castro. Neil Kilkenny's having a great season. He's got a good foil in Juan Day. And the depth of the squad that Popper has, you know, Andy Keogh on the bench yesterday. And he's rotated that squad around. He can leave Ivan Franić out for a game and bring Scott Neville in and not, you know, lose too much. Similar in the midfield, he can bring Brimmer in if Juan Day needs a spell or Kilkenny. I think he's done a terrific job there. And you could, you know, without wishing to say, oh, well, we all knew this was going to happen, you did look at his squad that he put together very early in the preseason. And you thought, yeah, they're going to have a real good shout this year. And it's going to take a heck of an effort now by Victory or somebody else to prevent them winning that plate.
Yeah, look, before the season started, I wouldn't have picked them to win it. Mm. I definitely would have had them in the top six, top four even, as you said. Very strong squad, fantastic coach and staff over there. And look, it's just great to see a team other than Sydney and Victory up there. I think, obviously Newcastle Jets were in the grand final last year, but and also had a very good year, but it's good to see a team from outside those, you know, two big metropolises doing well. I think they play fantastic football. They're very pragmatic in the way they play as well. They defend really well. You know, the first half yesterday, Victory really struggled to sort of break them down or create anything of real note. You know, a lot of times they had to go back, try to shift the ball to the other side, try to find those openings. Troisi started dropping a bit deeper to just get on the ball.
It's classic Popper, isn't it?
They were able to nullify those threats of Victory at home, who normally are such a great attacking team. So, look, I think it's a bit early to say, you know, there's going to be a grand final at Optus Stadium with 50,000. Still a long way to go, but look, it's their trophy to lose now. 7 points ahead, only nine or so games to go.
And the Premier's plate, I mean, they got one hand on that as whether they can go and do it in the finals yet again. Mm. But you know, Matthew Sparanovic is an interesting player. They've conceded two goals, I was told yesterday, in the seven games that he's played for the Glory. You know, when he signed for Perth, there was a lot of fanfare around it. And then because he missed the first half of the season, he was barely spoken about. I mean, this is a guy who played at the 2014 World Cup against Spain, Chile and the Netherlands, and it was one of our best. He's one of the almost the most disappointing players in Australian football in the sense that he never really went to that top level, Matt Sparanovic. And he could have done, and people will criticise for good reason his club choices. But by gee, he'll be important come the run in and come finals time because he's still absolute class, isn't he?
World-class defender. He really is. And, you know, I don't think many people would have been surprised to see him play in the Premier League at some stage.
Well, Liverpool apparently wanted him when he was younger and
he's definitely at that level. So, obviously, he's had quite a few injuries and quite a few significant injuries as well in that time. But it's good to see him back. It's good to see him back out on the pitch. And you'd love to have Spiro in any defence in the league. He's a starting centre-back in every single team in the A-League.
What did you make of the handball, which did, in a way, change the game because it was pretty even up until that point?
Yeah. I'm not convinced, to be honest. Is that hand-to-ball or ball-to-hand?
Oh, I think it's ball-to-hand.
Yeah, I do as well, to be honest. I can see why he gave it. But, my question on this, okay, if that's intentional, no problem. Because that's supposedly the rule. It has to happen then every week. Did the VAR get involved?
They looked at it, but it wasn't a clear and obvious error for them to get involved.
I don't know whether this is just me. Have they switched the thing off pretty much?
The VAR? Yeah. No, they still use it.
I don't know. I know they still use it officially, but I'm trying to remember when the last time it actually got involved and overturned.
But isn't that the point of it?
Yeah.
Well, to be honest, listen, you don't have to convince me because I didn't want the damn thing in the first place. I'm quite happy for it to sit there silently.
I'm aware of that.
But the problem is now, of course, that fans from all clubs know it's there. And if this decision goes against their team, then they want it used. If it goes for them, they don't want it
used. But I think everyone accepts now, even Kevin Musker would say, look, I don't agree with that decision, but we want the thing only to overrule the howler, the clear and obvious error. And people have debated that one until they're blue
but
in the face,
is the
whether
howler?
It's a pen. No. One, everyone sits there and goes, there's no way that's a pen, that's a mistake. The referee couldn't have seen it in real time.
Does everyone ever say that?
But this is the issue. And this
overwhelming
is the
majority. Although, by the letter of the law, the fourth official, the VAR official, can say there's no way that should be given. Whoever was in the chair yesterday would go, that's a bit harsh, but I can see why he's given it. He thinks the hands move towards the ball. I can't overrule that. That's clever officiating or clever use of the VAR.
Look, when they started using the VAR and they were using it for quite a few decisions, everyone was up in arms.
Yeah.
So I think they've taken a step back, looked at it, assessed it and said, look, the VAR's there. You're the referee. You referee the game. If something big happens, someone's going to talk to you in your ear and you're going to come and review the VAR. And that's how it should be used. No one is ever going to 100% agree with any decision the referee makes.
Exactly.
Doesn't mean they shouldn't have the best tech to enable them to make the right decision.
Anything more on it, Mr. Get Rid of It?
Get Rid of It.
I just wanted to hear it once today, Get Rid of It. Had to come in there at some stage. Brucey, Friday night, the Roar stunned Sydney, which was a result and a half. Dylan Wenzel-Halls obviously gets the headlines for his wonderful strike that gave them the victory. I loved Adam Taggart's game. And for mine, he had a role in both goals. He sets up the goal for Mickelson, the equaliser, and then I know that he overhits the pass to Wenzel-Halls and Ben Wallen should do better with the clearance and it ricochets and he gets lucky. But for mine, Taggart's pass was clever and he actually forces Wenzel-Halls to make that run with his back to goal. I mean, Jamie McLaren's had that chance now, a long run in the Socceroos, set up five games, only scored the one goal, maybe hasn't done enough in general play. Is Taggart the man now, all things being equal, assuming he's fit come the next national team camp, to be given that chance? Because it seems like his all-round play has a bit more to offer.
Look, Taggart's a fantastic player. I mean, any time you have a striker scoring goals in a team that's struggling as much as Brisbane Roar is, says something about that player. Mm. He's obviously a goal scorer. Does he play Socceroos? I reckon you can bring him into the camp. Why not? Whether he starts or comes off the bench or even plays at all, obviously it's up to Arnie and how he fits in. You know, a lot of criticism on Jamie McLaren throughout the Asian Cup especially, just about, you know, he scores goals at club level, not replicating at an international level. Well, you'll find that very few and far between, you got players that do it at club and international level. I remember when Dukes was playing for the Socceroos, everyone was criticising him that he didn't score enough goals. But everyone would probably cut their arm and leg off to get a Dukes in the team now. Yeah. So, you know.
And the rest of our body parts?
Yeah. Just so, exactly. So, you know, Taggart's a fantastic player. He's worthy and deserves a shot again in the Socceroos setup. Don't forget he went to that World Cup as well in 2014 and played.
Yeah.
So he's obviously a player that's got a lot of quality. And considering how we've been attacking, mainly through our wingers and them doing most of the damage, I think that you do bring a Taggart in.
I think he probably would have got a chance at the Asia, or at least in the initial Asian Cup squad, had he not picked up a groin injury in Adelaide just before Christmas. I think that stymied his progress. He's obviously, you know, getting back to his best now, and he's had, I think, a bit of an interest from three Korean clubs that was revealed over the weekend, which might sort of turn his head a little bit. But I'm with you, both of you, that I think Taggart, his overall game, probably offers a little bit more than some of the other options, but we'll see.
The highlight at spotless Western Sydney Central Coast on Saturday was probably something that happened off the field about 40 minutes before the game when Western Sydney removed the Thai Airways sponsor board in support of Hakim Al-Arabi. I mean, look, it's speaking to the club, they say it's a no-brainer in a human sense, but it's still a brave move. I mean, in this era in the game and in the landscape we're in right now, I mean, potentially casting away sponsors is not an easy call for clubs to make. So it was a brave decision, even though it was a no-brainer in a human sense for them. And, you know, because of Australian football.
Look, it was the right decision.
Yeah.
Particularly as during the week, the Melbourne Rebels rugby union team chose the day after Al Arabi appeared in leg chains at that court hearing in Bangkok, which was still such disturbing pictures to watch. You know, they announced, oh, you know, we've got a new sponsor, Thai Airways, boomf, and probably were completely unaware of the Al Arabi story. Mm. They very quickly were made aware of it, and they were forced to issue an apology. So the last thing a football club needed, with it being a footballer, you know, being in detention, was to draw that sort of publicity. So I think the Wanderers did the right thing.
A win for Marcus Babbel. Mike Mulvey, his future. I mean, is it time to seriously start talking about, and I know we've sort of touched on it at times this season, it's time to seriously start saying the Mariners have got a call to make before next season, potentially, on Mike Mulvey?
But what do you do? Do you bring another coach in, don't offer him the resources necessary to be as competitive as one would like? I think Mulvey's a good coach. I think, you know, Ocon probably saw this same issue, Walmsley before him.
He's had a bit more to spend than Ocon, though, I think.
He's had more to spend, yeah, and he's brought some players in January as well. Obviously, you need better results. I think the pressure will be on him, rightly. Do you get rid of him? That's a big call to make. I mean, I just don't see the Mariners as contenders right now. Doesn't matter. I don't know if the coach actually makes that big of a difference. I don't think a coach is going to make them last, and I also don't think coach is going to bring them into the top six. You know, I think it is what it is, and you know, the Mariners, they need more than just a new coach. they need a lot more.
I think the disappointing thing for the Mariners on Saturday, and don't forget, Mulvey has signed 17 players. Now, obviously, I'm not saying that they're
his squad,
top end of the budget, but you know, it's his squad.
Team.
So it's right that, you know, the media and people should ask questions when you've only won one game all season. And I think the disappointing thing for them on Saturday, in weeks gone by, they've been competitive. I mean, that first half against Melbourne Victory was sensational. They were brilliant. And then equally as poor in the second half when Victory turned up the heat a little bit. But at least you could come out of that game and go, do you know what, lads, there's something to work on there because we did so well against the champions in the first 45 minutes. On Saturday against the Wanderers, they offered very little, certainly in attack. I know they were missing Matty Simon, who's a driving force for them, but it was a nothing performance from the Central Coast. And the Wanderers didn't even really have to be anywhere near their best, and they weren't, to get the 3 points.
I think from a footballer's perspective, that's more mental as well. It's very easy to get yourself up and going when you're playing Victory. You know, Popper said it well before the Glory game this weekend. You know, Victory's always been a big game for Perth, but maybe playing Perth's now a big game for Melbourne Victory. You know, and, you know, the Mariners playing Melbourne Victory with, you know, it's always a big game for them. But playing Western Sydney, spotless with, you know, a terrible atmosphere, stadium's too big, not many people there. They know they can't make the finals. Very hard mentally to get yourself up for that game, to be able to do a lot of that hard work that isn't enjoyable, but that gets you going.
That's
and gets
the kick,
the result,
though, isn't it?
Yeah.
So especially when you're, you know, potentially facing back-to-back wooden spoons. I know there's no relegation, but, you know, you're still your professional. You don't want it. Nobody wants to win back-to-back wooden spoons,
no,
do they? And that was the proverbial six-pointer on Saturday.
Yeah. As we segue to matters overseas, I want to bring up Danny Vukovic's exploits in Belgium. They won again on Friday night over there, Saturday morning our time. Haven't seen the rest of the results in Belgium, but at the time they were 12 points clear at the top, so maybe it's 9 now, I'm not sure. Either way, they're storming away to the title, Genk, with Danny Vukovic's number one, another clean sheet. This guy is in unbelievable touch. Training form might be one thing, but at the Asian Cup we watched a few sessions and honestly, he was spellbinding at times, the amount of stops he was making. There was one incident where Graham Arnold was talking to us in the media and we saw a goalkeeper flying across the goals to the top corner, tipping one away out of the corner of our eye because we were talking to Arnie. And we all turned around to go, who was that? And Arnie said to us, you know, I'm lucky to have Matty Ryan, touch wood, he's fine. But if something, God forbid, had to happen and he had to miss a game or whatnot, we would not be losing much. We are blessed yet again.
So he's the number two now?
Oh, clearly. by daylight, I think, to the rest. And that's nothing against Mitchell Angerak, but Vuca is just in supreme form and could well win the title in Belgium. It's an amazing story at, what, he's 33 years of age.
Yeah, and obviously the career path that he's had, you know, I played with him in the Olympic team in the Oli Roos. Unbelievable keeper. Mm. He is seriously quality. Obviously missed him when he touched the referee, I think, and he got banned for
9 months.
9 months, yeah, long time. And obviously he went to Victory. His son was sick. He was struggling with that. Good on Victory and obviously Sydney FC to broker a deal that got him over to Sydney. Since then, his son got better, which is the most important thing, and he's really been able to kick on and enjoy his football again without having those worries in the background. And I think we're seeing the fruit of that, actually, because he's a fantastic keeper and it's great that he's in Belgium. I wish he got a bit more limelight, if you like, because that's a fantastic feat.
Yeah, well, perhaps his season is as good as anyone in terms of Australians in Europe at the moment. I mean, Matty Ryan's had a great campaign in the Premier League, but Danny Vukovic wins the title in Belgium. That's on par at least with anyone else. I wouldn't have minded him in goals for Chelsea overnight because Man City put six past them. So back to the top they go with Liverpool having a game in hand. But yeah, that was a cruise. Problems there for Sarri. Man City just, you know, dominant once more. Another Aguero hat-trick.
You getting nervous yet, Garby?
I've been nervous all season. You'd be mad not to be against the best single-season Premier League team of all time. Still yours, as much as it is ours to win.
Yeah. I mean, the first 25 minutes, I watched the game this morning, which is why I've got huge bags under my eyes. and City just, I mean, they literally just blew Chelsea out of the water. It was extraordinary. And the level of football in that first half, and by the way, not just from City. City went 4-0 up. And for the next, that was by 25 minutes. And for the next 20 minutes, Chelsea played City off the park. I'm telling you, they were whizzing the ball around, you know, left to right, creating opportunities. Higuain had a couple. Obviously, they were 4-0 down by then. The game had gone. But the level of football was just astonishing, absolutely astonishing. And City, I think, are coming good at the right time of the season. Obviously, they've got a lot of trophies to aim for. They've got the Carabao Cup final. They're still in the FA Cup, the Champions League, and, of course, the Premier League. But they've got a very good squad depth, haven't they? So it's going to be fascinating. And, you know, it was a good response from Liverpool as well, to be fair, on Saturday against Bournemouth, because they needed that after a couple of, you know, little wobbles, only draws, but wobbles nonetheless, which has allowed City to close the gap. Their game in hand, obviously, is against United.
Away,
which is going to be very, very tough. That could be crucial. City have got to play United later on in the season. Have you heard the stuff that I'd the Manchester social radio thing?
I think we've got that to play. Let's take a listen.
A United fan speaking to a City presenter. This is on Manchester Social Football, and this is brilliant. You'll laugh at this.
Good chance the derby's going to get moved to very far towards the back end of the season. At that point, we could be full on neck and neck, a point or less between us and Liverpool. You beat us, Liverpool win the league. We win the league. What do you want? Do you want us to beat you?
It's an absolute no-brainer for me. I'd turn up and I'd hand City the title myself. I'd have a witness playing We Are the Champions behind me. I'd gift wrap it and I'd be on my knees and I'd hand it to them. Because if Liverpool, God forbid, win that league, there'll be commemorative cups, T-shirts, key rings. They'll bring out a record and they'll get Barnes to do the rap again. They'll bring back the last Liverpool team to win the league and they'll have that team play this team in the Clash of the Champions game at Wembley. It doesn't bear thinking about. I swear to you, man. Everyone needs to get behind City.
How brilliant is that?
Bloody oath we will. That's what we're up against, though. Even United's prepared to roll over for City, Brucey.
Yeah, look, I think City will win it. I just think their squad depth is too good. Liverpool, I don't know, they might just slip up, you know. Excuse the pun anyone remembers Gerrard's slip. But honestly, it depends also how far they go in the Champions League. That's going to be a big one. I think whoever gets knocked out of the Champions League first probably goes on and wins the Premier League, just because of that load of those high-level games all the time can wear teams down.
Man United away is a very difficult game because they've gone 11 undefeated. Now they're back in the top four. What on earth was Jose Mourinho doing with that football club? We said all along they had the quality there. Martial, look at his goal on the weekend. Look at what Pogba's doing now. Rashford's form since Mourinho's gone. they had the ingredients to be not necessarily the title challenger for the longevity of the season with City and Liverpool, but certainly a top four side with the money that's been invested. And his ego, I'm sorry, it sabotaged their season. Well,
it's just a happier camp all round. You can tell. They're playing with a freedom. They're relaxed again. Whereas before it was stifled, it was stultifying some of the football they were playing. You could tell that some of the players weren't on the same page as Mourinho. They didn't like, they had personality clashes, Pogba being one. Now, that's not to say that Mourinho was necessarily in the wrong, but when it's more than one player, two, three, four, five.
And you're sitting in sixth.
Yeah. And you're also falling out with your executive vice chairman and telling the board that they don't know what they're doing because they're not giving you enough money to, you know, you're on a slippery slope. So Solskjaer has done a very, very good job. They won't win the title, but they could have a big say in who does.
Yeah. And maybe going to run in the Champions League too.
Yeah, definitely. I think Solskjaer has done a great job, but I think with Mourinho, it was more about that management. You know, he's obviously a fantastic coach, what he's done in the past and everything like that. But I just think he alluded to it in a, I think it was an interview he did on beIN Sports. It's just managing this new generation, you know, these Lingards, these Rashfords.
He's been listening to Marcus Babbel.
Yeah. But maybe it's something that some of these coaches are struggling with, because Solskjaer seems to have, you know, they've all been good players. They're all good coaches at that level. Maybe it is that man management, that motivation, that let's fight for the club, let's fight for the coach, let's fight for each other. Mm. Maybe that's all that was missing.
That's what I mean, his ego. It's my way or the highway, but you've got to adapt sometimes in life and adjust. And if you don't, well, you know, you fall apart, and he's fallen away from being the special one, that's for sure. Let's fly through some Twitter questions from our listeners before we have a look at the W League Grand Final to finish off. Some great questions that have come through. This one from the Far Post Perth. So it's slightly tongue-in-cheek because it's a Perth Glory fan site, but they say, who is the second best foreigner to play in the A-League after Diego Castro?
Ever?
Ever.
I'd have to say Thomas Bruijs.
I think that's just their way of giving Castro a pump up for good reason.
Yeah, Berisha would probably go close as well.
Yeah.
In terms of player,
Thomas Bruijs, in terms of goal scorer and obviously trophy winner, it'd have to be...
But Castro might just be number one, the way that he's gone over the last few years. And if he leads the Glory to the title as captain, maybe he does.
That's what is missing, isn't it? If he does that, then...
He could join...
Spoken in the
different
same
level, breath. Yeah.
Bruijs with top billing, potentially.
That's always been the thing about Messi, isn't he? Best player in the world for so many years. Ronaldo the same, but never won the World Cup. So are they in the same bracket as Pele and Maradona? And
it's such a long conversation, though. But Ronaldo, it's harder for him to do it with Portugal. He doesn't have the support, but he won a Euros, which is an enormous feat, et cetera, et cetera. From Jared Hancock, this is a good one for you, Brucey. As a former striker, how do you think the NPL products are going? Kenny Athu, Dylan Wenzel-Halls, Elvis Kamsoba, and a few others. What do you make of the way that they've adapted to the demands of the A-League?
I think they've adapted really well. And, you know, for me, I was speaking to someone earlier this morning, actually, about the expansion that obviously the A-League is going to be doing from next year. And it just shows that there is that talent. You know, some people might be detracting away from it. You know, there's always the detractors out there. It's going to dilute the level and all that sort of speak you get. But it just shows those players are representing NPL products well, and it just shows that with expansion, there are players that are maybe not getting opportunities today that will get more opportunities, and they're at that level.
From AK Chapman, once Western Melbourne joins the A-League, what will their crowds be like? Some news that has also come through overnight that Josh Risden could be set to sign for Western Melbourne, so they're starting to get the train going in that regard. Will it do what the Wanderers did to Sydney FC and maybe bring some out of the woodwork and generate more of a rivalry? Are you worried about the crowds that Melbourne City can generate with Western Melbourne coming onto the scene?
I'm certainly worried about Melbourne City's crowds that they're generating. It's difficult to know, isn't it? Mm. Because they're going to play these first couple of years in Geelong, as we understand it, although whether there's an agreement yet with Gardenia Park or not, I don't know. But if they're going to play there, then move back to Western Melbourne. Tarnit, is that how you pronounce it? Tarnit. Which, from what I'm led to believe, is it's an up-and-coming area in terms of population, but it's still quite sparse at the moment. It's countryside, essentially. The big one for me is, how do they brand this? If they brand it Western Melbourne, you can pretty much cut off the Geelong support, I would imagine.
It's not too far away.
No. I'm not saying at the distance, but in terms of your perception, if you're Geelong, and I don't know Melbourne or Victoria that well, but if you're Geelong, are you going to associate with something that's labelled Melbourne?
Yeah, I think you could potentially, okay, if that's a football team and it's not too far and away and they played some games there early on. Yeah, there's a chance for
that.
And
obviously vice versa, if you label it Geelong or something else, then, you know, the people in Melbourne. I don't know. It's an interesting one. I think, without wishing to revisit the whole expansion debate, I think the Dandenong bid had a clearer defined fan base, but they were clearly concerned about the stadium. And the one thing I do like about the Western Melbourne bid is this plan to build the first football specific stadium, because I think that's a game changer. That is fantastic. Let's just hope that there's enough people to fill it.
That's what got them over the line. From Aidan Koss, can you see the RBB and the crowds coming back for the Wanderers just because they've got that new stadium, speaking of stadiums, to start next season?
I think the stadium will attract people again, but I also think, I don't know, but I also would speculate that Mr. Lederer is going to go and sign a Honda type, you know, marquee.
To bring in the new stadium.
And make it, you know, make the most of that opportunity. I don't know, but that's what I would be doing.
He wants to know about the relationship with the fans. I mean, the stadium will be great. I can still see a packed crowd for the first game, but they've got to work on building that because it won't last over the course of the season if these fractures between the club and the fans continue to rumble on. They've got to work on massaging that because we want the RBB back in force. We want them behaving well, but we want them back in force and
it's
doing what
they
did to start.
It's not just the RBB at the moment. I mean, you know, the den is not there anymore in Brisbane. Melburnians have disbanded. I think they've been replaced by a new group that has been officially sanctioned by Melbourne City and endorsed, which I have to say concerns me a little bit. You know, football fandom should be organic, not officially rubber stamped. So I think there are a few problems around the league at the moment with those fan groups. A
couple of quick ones to finish on for Brucey from 80s Timo, Timber Tim. Is your debut goal for Adelaide in the 2007 Asian Champions League against Songnam your best goal?
I don't think it's my best one, but...
Or your most memorable.
I certainly enjoyed it. No, not my most memorable. My most memorable A-League goal would be the semi-final against Melbourne City. I think the first goal in that game, which obviously we won that game and got to the grand final and won it. But yeah, that was an important one because the game was just so evenly poised. You know, you could feel the tension in the stadium, and it was such a big game.
Best goal then?
Best goal? Yeah, I'd give it to that one as well. Okay. Just because of the circumstance as well, like if you package it all up, it's probably my best and most memorable goal for Adelaide United.
And from our good friend Robbie Cornthwaite, who sat in that chair on the podcast as well, who would win a debate between Bruce and Jason Spaniolo?
Look, I'd argue I'd win it, but of course I would. But Spaniolo, fantastic mate, fantastic player when he played with us at Adelaide United, obviously. But he loved to debate, that bloke. He'd debate everything. Yeah.
I've never met him, but from the outside, he seems like a quiet character.
Yeah, you'd think so, but it's always the ones you least
what's
expect.
What's he doing now, Bruce?
His real estate agent does really well. Yeah, he's like the principal of Ray White Norman.
Well, there you go. His negotiating skills are
absolutely
superb.
Yeah, they are. He's got good relationships.
He's got some yapper on him then, clearly.
Yeah, definitely. But he's doing well. One of the few players that have transitioned so well.
And someone said, what about Scott Jamieson? We know that he's got a mouth in him too.
Yeah, look, I had a bit of a run-in with Jammer after that grand final. But, he's a good guy. He's a good guy. Off the field, he's a legend. On the field, he's a targeted man, I'd argue. But a good bloke.
Brilliant. As you are, Brucey. And just before we finish, great having you on the podcast. W League Grand Final, Saturday afternoon, huge occasion. How good was Sammy Kerr yesterday? That was just, it was wonderful to watch a sports person just deliver their very best on the big stage yet again. That's what we love watching in sport more than anything else.
Well, that brings us full circle, doesn't it? If we can get back to talking about Sam Kerr and the actual football around the Matildas and the W League, then so much the better. She's a freak, isn't she? Was it 25-minute hat-trick something, or 35-minute hat-trick? Unbelievable.
She's so good, eh? She's just like head and shoulders above the rest.
Yeah.
So, you know, this guy's talking about Castro, foreigner, blah, blah. There's a lot of good foreigners. But Sam Kerr is just another level. And I think they'll win the grand final. Because they have Sam Kerr.
Because of her.
I don't say it's a
That's one good thing the FFA got right at the marquee for Sam Kerr.
That is a good thing that the FFA got right.
Sydney's got a good team as well, though. Alana Kennedy, Caitlin Ford's flying.
I don't care who's in what team. If you've got Sam Kerr in your team, I don't say it's a one-woman team.
Yeah.
But, she, you know, you got the players that make a difference, but she just makes the game. It just turns the dial so far in your favour, having her in your team. I think Perth are going to win the grand final. I'll say it now.
She'll be a beauty. Rachel Hill's got a wonderful partnership with her well. And it's a great combination. So that's going to be a fascinating game to watch. 4 p.m. on Saturday from Jubilee Oval. Of course, Fox Sports, the only place you want to watch it. And we'll have all the build-up to that, the game and the reaction. And then we build into a doubleheader of A-League that night. A big weekend of A-League, of course, as we build up to the finals. Simon Hill, Bruce Tay, thanks so much for joining me.
Cheers, Gobby.
Been thanks great to have on. You
Good
with
to see
me
you, Bruce.
On another big day in Australian football. Brucey, you've been great. Thanks so much. No surprise there. Football will be back on Wednesday with Muzza, Andy Harper and Brenton Speed. Tune in for that from the Fox football team. Thanks so much for your company.